I don't know if I'm going to show how to visualize it. I'm just trying to figure it all out. I want to talk a little bit about some work we've been doing in Rush Valley, Utah, which is an arid region, where we're looking at a rangeland and species competition. And when we got into this project, we really started thinking about how to look at the system and realize that we weren't coming with enough tools. And really, when there was a time, and I'm glad Fred talked about this, when really we could show up with some instruments, we could instrument a site, we have the technology, we've got a question, we've got a site, and we could just start going. And we might put together what we do into this graphic here, where we'd start with, you know, we have some technology, we start with a plan, we collect our data, come back to analysis, and we create some knowledge, and we'd feel pretty comfortable with that. But that was really when data were expensive. And I look at this. This is actually a graph from 2007 from Kaylee's study site there in the Cook Farm. And, you know, what we were doing there, we'd grab our Excel spreadsheet, we'd analyze the data from that, we create a really pretty graph here. One data logger, 5 sensors, life was good. We could see some cool things happening. Here's the profile there. We had a hard pan there at about 130 centimeters. What we observed with the wheat growing on there was that the 120 centimeter water content was coming down. The roots were getting down there, taking it all up. But the 150 centimeter sensor was hardly changing at all. And going back to the morphology, we saw this hard pan there, and it all made a lot of sense. That was great. Then we thought, well, that was so exciting. Why don't we try this with 42 sites? And let's do it instead of just 1 year. Let's spread that over from 2007 now. It's still going. And this is exactly what we felt from that. The data were literally crushing us. We have how many? 250,000 data points now? And keep going. So that was us kind of starting, hey, we've got an idea. We just went to the field with this simple little cycle. Let's see what we can do. And suddenly it just wasn't working. The other problem, and Kaylee mentioned this a little bit. It changed my graphic there. We didn't need to know what it said there. Was that students routinely go out to some of our sites, particularly this is some Wasatch Plateau data that we collected a few years ago. We wanted to compare a couple of different sites, but one was sitting there walking around in the site. They kicked one of our sensors, and away it went. And we didn't know about it for 2 months. So that year's worth of data doing the comparison, we didn't have any information from there. So the question is, how do we take something like the Cook Farm, for example? We want to go out there. We want to look at the hydrology. We get all this temporal and spatial modeling done. It's quite interesting. I really enjoyed that talk. But what eventually we want to do is really create scientific understanding out of it. And we want to write a paper so everybody can know how exciting the hydrology at Cook Farm is or on the Wasatch Plateau. But if we're not careful, if we don't start in the right place, we're going to miss it. And so when data are abundant, we need to take a different approach. We can't just sit there in this small little cycle here where we plan, collect, analyze, woohoo, we got some knowledge and we start again. We've got to, before we go to the field, before we start creating a 750,000 data points, we've got to sit down and say, what are we going to do with that? And I wanted to talk a little bit about this. It's not nearly as deep as John's talk on observations, but I will say we can't start being in the observation process until we can actually get access to the observations, and with so much data, we just can't. It overwhelms us. And so what if we start here and look at this process, that we actually extend this cycle around to really work with the data so that eventually when we want to get back to this knowledge portion, we are able to do it without it causing a lot of problems. So here's our study site. This, as I mentioned, this is the Rush Valley in Utah. One thing that's happening with the Rush Valley is we've got invasive species coming in. This is a thing that I feel very personally invested in. I hate cheatgrass. I mean, I really hate cheatgrass. I think it's you know, it gets stuck in the socks when you're hiking. It's invading these rangeland. It's terrible for the animals there. They can't eat it. This other weed called halogenin is coming in. It's actually toxic to a lot of the rangeland animals. So this is a pretty serious situation that when these outcompete the native species, we've got problems. And of course, as we talk about this drying out of the land, we have things like fire coming into the equation. We have mammals, something that really I hadn't thought about before. And we've got changing precipitation with global climate change. So how do these all interact with the system? We start with some knowledge of the situation. We are interested in this piece here where we're comparing this native and non-native, this invasive species dynamic. But to try to understand that, we have to collaborate with other people to understand some of these other pieces. For example, we have these on either side of this, we have seeds, we have seedlings. Not too much going on there, not a lot of complexity, but we add in fire, we add in precipitation. Then we look at small mammals. We have things that you don't really consider ants. What are the ants doing out there, and how are they participating in this process? And then we really have something that we need to learn a little bit more about. So we start in the cycle. I mentioned at the start we've got the existing technology. That's easy. We want to do some environmental measurement. Maybe we'll get wind speed, precipitation, etc. Want to measure the water. We really focused on the water potential this time. That came off the Wasatch Plateau. When we were up on the plateau, we instrumented the whole area with water content sensors. We came back and to do the analysis, and we found that the water content was great. There was a lot of interesting things going on, but we couldn't compare them very well because this was some glacial till, and we had soil types changing just within meters. And so a plot that was really set up very nearby didn't give us a way to understand the differences in water content. So we focused on the water potential and then also some canopy dynamics with NDVI. So when we were thinking about putting our plan together, the data collection, as I said, was crucial. And we really need to make some determinations as we go. Think about the data collection. What's our response we're looking for? How frequently are we going to collect those data? How are we going to get them back? On the Cook Farm, for example, for a lot of times we were going out and hand-downloading data. On the Wasatch Plateau, we had to do the same thing. The problem was that we could only visit there for 3 months in the summer. It's up at 3,000 meters. And so if things went badly, as they did one year where we had 10 meters of snow or some crazy amount, it broke all our sights, and then we didn't know about it till about the 1st of July. So wireless would be great. What are we going to do to transform the data? How are we going to archive these data and make them available easily so that we are not in that process? It's done automatically. What variables do we want to see? I don't necessarily want to see water potential come straight out of this experiment. I want to know what's the water availability of the plants there. And I want something derived so I can see that very easily. Then things like metadata are important. On the Wasatch Plateau, one of our students lost our LAI book that they'd been writing LAI down for the whole summer. Well, we needed to be a little more careful there as well. how's this? See, I'm learning. If I keep going with this, anyway. Gap filling, synchronizing data. You can see this. We need to put a little thought going in to this. So here's our experimental side. This is one of five plots that I showed you out there. We have 100 different sensors out there focused on water potential. Got a little water content out there as well to look at the water storage. We also looking at the canopy with NDVI sensors and then some MET sensors going on there as well. Here's a little flyover. It doesn't play as fast as it did on my computer, but you can see just a little bit here. These are rainout shelters, actually. Here's where we're changing the precipitation. What you're seeing here, these are burn plots. This is a burned area where they actually did prescribed burns in some of these areas, and then we had native vegetation. See what the ants have done out there. There's one of our rainout shelters where we either add more rain or take some rain away, and you can see what it looks like, native again, and fire, and we'll just go on from there. With our data collection, we decided we were going to do all that we could to get the data back so that we didn't have to do any work with it. So we put cellular data loggers out across this area, a couple in each one of these enclosures. We got it back by cell phone, and then put it on the network, and we're in the process of creating the system that's actually taking the data out, parsing and putting in the pieces that we want. I didn't really mention it, by the way, but in both of these, we have mammal areas where we allow the small mammals, and we actually were able to exclude mammals in some of these areas, and we'll talk about what they did in a moment. So the idea here is that we start with a QA/QC. Several of the speakers have already talked about this challenge, that when you get the data back, what are the data like? Are we happy with them? Are we not? Are we going to have to go out and replace a sensor that may have been kicked or chewed on by a rodent? This QA/QC process is pretty important. Then we actually, what we did in this experiment was we said, you know, we are not the most intelligent on databasing. It's not our core competency. We went out to the bioinformatics people who are very used to dealing with large quantities of data because they work with DNA. And we said, hey, what are your ideas? Can you build us a system? And they said to us at first, did you know there are some existing things you could do? We can help you out, but maybe you ought to look at these. And we began to integrate. This is called HydroServer. I haven't worked with it much. My collaborator, Rick Gill, is working with the bioinformatics people and working through this. So we're talking about getting data in here, talking about collecting metadata, things like leaf area index, mammal insect counts, plant species. I think you get the idea. Then going in for a data repository, we can create maps where our data come from. This is just many of Rick's experiments, but the idea is similar. Our site is out here. And then we can go and actually discover information about these things. This is just an example of a HydroServer desktop that's getting information in, not from our site. So where does that all leave us? Well, at this point, we're just starting, and we're trying to get it right this time with a lot of the things that we've had challenges with. I love talking about data more than trying to get data in, so I stuck this slide in to show you some of the things. Here's a picture that I showed you earlier. Here's native species. Here's the invasive species. They actually are coming in here after these two areas have been burned. Here we have mammals. Here we have no mammals. And it's very interesting that we observe this response where no mammals are concerned. This is late in the summer this year, where it's basically cleared off. There's no green area here. Here we're getting green up. This is just after a rain, and of course we wonder why. And now we have the instruments on the ground to tell us that in blue we have this burned with mammal area. Here in red, this is the no mammals burned area, and basically what we see is the cheatgrass, as I knew it would, steals all the moisture, and then dies. It germinates in the fall, comes up in the spring. Basically, there's very little moisture available for growth. Where no cheatgrass over here, there was available moisture for the halogen to grow. The reason is that the mammals went out, the mice went out and ate all the cheatgrass seeds. So I like mice. They're actually fighting off the cheatgrass. Anyway, this is just the first data products out of there. I'm hoping to have systems where we can look at these things on a monthly basis to look at the behavior of these systems as we go. And we're really putting those in place right now. So just a few thoughts that I'd like to leave you with. In this day and age, data abundance, where we can put a lot of sensors out to make measurements, means that we have to get away from kind of our conventional approach to measurement. And it also means that collaboration between groups is important. This working with the bioinformatics groups really has helped broaden our vision of what we can do and the things that we can get out. And I think that we really can explain these systems that we're most interested in when we measure the right parameter and when they're accessible to us after we make the measurement and not buried in Excel spreadsheets. And I'd be happy to take questions. So this experiment here is just brand new. We just set it up, and we're literally trying to get the data right here. And so not very long, honestly, on the work that I've been doing. We've just found a sensor kind of that will make good measurements in the range we want with good accuracy. So it's fairly young, but things look pretty good there. We have a very simple response that we're looking at, and the data really, and maybe this goes back to John, they show exactly what I expected. So, darn it, now I can't have confidence in that anymore. But yeah, so not long. 20 years is a lot longer than we've been doing it there.